That's what I was gonna ask you.
Question, can you talk a little bit about the training that the two officers in question had before this incident happened? Did they have any kind of, you used the term that it was not kind of de-escalation situation. Can you talk about what training these officers had, how recent it was, and if they were trained to handle a situation like this as part of their regular duties?
Sure, well, I would like to say if you are a certified sworn officer within this state or any state, when you go through the academy, you're actually put through the process of being able to respond in situations like this. And one of the predicates on that is you have to be able to know and be able to apply certain levels of force. In this situation, it was deadly force. And deadly force had to be used because if you take a step down from deadly force to non-lethal, let's just say non-lethal, one of our non-lethal tools would be, let's say, a taser. Well, if you know anything about a taser only has a minimum range of effectiveness. And the further the range, the farther the taser barbs go. So, of course, in this situation, if anyone asks, this would not be the best tool used in this situation. You got to understand something. When you're in a situation like this, our concern is to stop the threat. Even beyond this situation, Minnesota or anywhere else you want to pick that's really got some coverage, you need to stop the threat. When this threat stops, the officer stops. Because what we're trying to do is gain compliance. In this situation, the threat was direct. It was direct. And even in the midst of commands and gunfire, Mr. McCree kept walking and didn't flinch. He walked straight up the aisle through what he knew was going on. See, when you have the intent, when you have the capability and you have the means in a situation like that, we have no choice but to counter with the appropriate force to stop the threat. And that's what we did.
Can you address why Officer Richardson, or do you have any statement on why Officer Richardson said that there were shots fired from McCree's gun, even though ballistics had said that it wasn't?
I will confirm that ballistics said that Mr. McCree did not fire a shot. And I know that. I cannot speak for my officer. I let him actually be the one to explain that. But what I do know, from experience myself and from managing several of these situations, when you're in a situation like that and you hear gunfire, you really don't know who it's coming from. You don't know if it's coming from the officer or if it's coming from the suspect or it's coming from both, but you know you hear it. I mean, that's if you've never been in a situation like that, that is a very traumatic time. And you're trying to get people on the ground because you're in the parking lot. And, you know, self-preservation is at hand when you're in a situation that's confronting, when you're confronted with a situation like that.
Chief, Officer Harris was carrying, it looked like a rifle. Is that part of his standard equipment that he would have for that post at Walmart? Or did he recover that once he heard that McCree had a gun?
No. I don't think maybe you didn't read the bullet points that I gave you. Mr. McCree was actually, and I think you were talking about when he was actually laying on the pavement and you saw an officer come.
With a rifle.
Yes. That's an AR-15. That's department issue. But in the bullet points that I gave you, it really indicates that officer ran out of ammunition. So he went to his vehicle to get a weapon that did have ammunition in it. When you saw him in the video, he was just supplying coverage to the officer that was tending to Mr. McCree. So, you know, if you want to know why he was there, he was just supplying coverage for that officer while he worked on Mr. McCreary?
He didn't use the AR-15 to fire Mr. McCreary.
No. No, sir.
And
this was an alternative weapon that he used just to cover the area. Now, initially, yes, he used his handgun. He used his firearm initially, but when he was out of ammunition and he knew that Mr. McCreary was actually looking for him and searching for him in that parking lot, the second officer arrived and was able to engage Mr. McCreary. And that's when the original officer went and got another weapon and came back to the scene to cover the officer that was covering Mr. McCreary.
I think there's dash cam footage that might have some audio. Have you reviewed that, and do you know exactly what was exchanged between Officer Baker and Mr. McCreary before shots were fired? Did he tell him to put his hands up or to drop the weapon, for example?
Yes, he did. He did give verbal commands to Mr. McCreary. Yes, he did.
Do you know exactly what he said? Because I don't think any of us heard the audio.
From his statement, he said that he asked him to drop the weapon.
Why can't we hear the audio?
The audio for the body cam footage, if you know anything about the way body cams work, if I had a body cam on right now and I turned it on, it goes back 2 minutes from the moment I turn it on. So if I turn it on, the question that you might have asked me 2 minutes ago, it will start from there. In this footage, you can see that the officer turned his body cam on. He touched it and turned it on once he got to Mr. McCreary, which backs him up all the way to when he got out of his vehicle. And that's why you don't hear any audio. Now, once it catches up with current time, then the audio kicks in. On the video system, the audio actually kicks in at 1:55, a minute and 55 seconds into this body cam footage. And that's why I was so adamant about how this video is to be released, because regardless of the facts, we still have a family out there that is still grieving over their loss of their son. And when that audio comes on, it's very graphic. And that's something that I didn't want the family to hear. I didn't want that's being replayed for the family. And that's just the compassion that I have for the family. Even though we had to do what we had to do, there is still humanity in this situation that I don't want the family to hear that. Who wants to hear that?
So technically, there isn't anywhere on tape where the officer gave the command to drop the weapon. Is that what you're saying?
Not on this body cam footage, no.
So is there any video that exists where those commands are given that we can hear?
No.
So it's the officer's order only that he gave the command?
That's correct. That's how we're trained. And for those...
other officer was also trained.
Yes.
And in an arrest, he should have his body cam on, and he didn't have it on. So that leads into question whether or not the officers actually fulfilled what they were trained to do. So it leads to question, did this officer fulfill his training in saying, drop your weapon? That leaves that question in the minds of individuals that are watching a muted video.
I understand that. That leaves question, and that's why I'm here to actually address those questions. But as you're questioning the officer, you have to question the suspect and the individual that we're dealing with. At what point in time, what was his intent when he went to the car and got a firearm? There is no denying that he had a firearm. So when he comes out with a firearm and he's actually walking towards the officer pointed it at him, does that not justify an officer responding in the justified manner that he should?
Because Chief, what you were saying is from that distance, it looks like about 20, 30 yards, the taser isn't effective. So proper de-escalation at that point, the training would say, would be a verbal command. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, training says that when you're in an intimate situation and lethal force is presented to you and your life is in intimate danger and the lives around you are in that same danger, yes, you have to respond in kind. You have to counter that response.
Would the training require a verbal command before the officer opened fire?
Yes, sir, we're trained to do that.
Did witnesses say they heard that command?
Far as what the witnesses said, that is in the SLED's detailed report that I definitely couldn't supply to you today because it's very lengthy, but all that is in the report.
And
like I said, this report is being reviewed by the Department of Justice right now, possibly. So another set of eyes will actually be able to bring forth even more, maybe, facts and findings. But I'm pretty positively sure that it's going to bring the same facts and findings that we have right here.
In addition to that training, Chief.
Yes, ma'am.
An officer that is ensuing a subject, are they not trained to cut on their video the moment that they begin that process? So the moment that officer stepped out of his car and knew that he was pursuing a suspect, potentially an armed suspect, should it not been a part of his training to immediately cut on that camera so that any encounters between he and the suspect would have been recorded? Or is it the habitual habits of the police officers in our department to only cut on the audio once they've taken their subject down or in any situation? Because it seems like he should have cut the body cam on, not only the recording, but also the audio from the beginning, because it's as simple as a press of a button, isn't it?
Well, what you're asking me is he should have cut the video and the audio on. It's not two separate controls. Once you turn the body cam on, it's going to record and give you video and audio.
Well, then why can't we hear the commands?
Because when he turned the body cam on, it backs up 2 minutes, approximately 2 minutes from the time it's activated.
So it's recording continuously?
Yes.
But Chief, are you saying that there is no audio anywhere of that 2 minutes where there's only video? Even though it backs up, you said it backs up 2 minutes.
Correct.
But
that's just the nomenclature of that body cam.
But so does that mean that any time that a body cam is turned on, that there's 2 minutes of quiet time?
Yes. At any point in time, if I actually did a vehicle stop on you and I pulled you over, right, and I touched my body cam and turned it on as I got out the vehicle to approach your vehicle, that body cam will actually start probably whatever radio station I was listening to or whatever traffic that was going on in my vehicle before I actually stepped out of the car to engage you. It will actually start there. That's just a prerequisite, and that's just a safety measure that body cams have within them to collect all the footage.
Well, Chief, that kind of begs the question. If it backs up 2 minutes, why would it not have the audio from the start 2 minutes before up through the time of the command and then the confrontation? Why would that audio not exist if it backed up and started 2 minutes prior?
It records. It video records whatever it sees in those 2 minutes. Once it catches up to real time, then audio kicks in.
So there's a gap in any body cam system,
yes,
that you use where there is a 1 minute and 55 second gap in any incident where there is no audio.
That same setup, the same procedure, the things that I'm describing to you, exist in every indication every usage of our body cam system. Every time you turn it on, it's going to back up and it's not going to play for a certain period of time, and then once it gets to current time, then audio will play.
Well, I guess the question would be, and I'm not trying to argue with you, Chief, but if the 1 minute 55 second backup goes back to protect the what the officer was doing 2 minutes before, it does not then show what the officer said and or the suspect said, other than the visual, for that 1 minute and 55 seconds where there's interaction between the two.
You're saying what the officer said and the suspect said?
So you said yourself, there is no audio or video that shows the commands that your officer said in his statement that he gave to the suspect, right?
All right.
However, his body cam was on.
Yes.
But you cannot hear it because of the system, call it the way it's made or a flaw, I guess, how you look at it. There is no way to hear those commands.
Okay.
Is that a system that protects the integrity of any investigation? Is that a good system where there's a minute and 55 seconds of quiet time when, in a case like this, that minute and 55 seconds may clear up everything in this case?
I would say to you that is the determination of when you activate your body cam. If you are able and have the ability to activate your body cam immediately, then I think everything that you're looking for in any situation will be there. That quiet time that you will probably hear 2 minutes prior will be non-related to that incident as it starts. In this situation, and I'm pretty sure you're asking me these questions in relevance to this situation.
That's right.
When you have an officer that's responding for transport, and then all of a sudden on the radio he hears that the suspect is on foot, and then there's gunfire, and he pulls up and he sees the suspect with a gun in his hand, and you hear an officer that's asking for help, and he steps out of his vehicle and immediately sees the suspect, he has to engage that suspect. In a perfect world, if he could have touched his body cam and it came on and we could have heard everything that he had to say, yeah, I think that would probably have been a lot better.
According to the SOP for the city of Chester, isn't that what he should have done?
He should have worn his body cam and activated. And during, given this situation and the heat of the moment, he activated it as soon as he could because his life was in danger the moment he pulled up and got out of that vehicle.
That's not what the SOP says. It doesn't say as soon as you can. It says when you are engaging and in pursuit that the officer should turn on his body cam, if I read it correctly. And I've been reading it for the past 3 nights.
And that's great. I'm glad that you read that. And what I'm telling you is, yes, that's what SOP says.
So he didn't follow procedure.
He followed SOP the best he could given the circumstances that he was put in.
You said Officer Harris was reprimanded, but Officer Baker was not. Is that right?
No, I said Officer Harris was reprimanded for not having his body cam on.
Did Officer Baker face any reprimand for his actions?
He hadn't had any personal discipline at this point. Personnel discipline at this point, no.
Chief, I have a question. We've actually got the dash cam videos and reviewed them. Did the officer arriving on the scene, who we just saw his body camera footage, did he have any indication that Arian was handcuffed? Because it just sounds like, as you listen to the radio traffic, he hears shots fired as he's pulling into the parking lot. He hears he's got a gun, and then he gets out. Would he have had any way of knowing that Arian was handcuffed?
When he was called to respond to Walmart for transport, when you hear that, that usually means that the subject that you're actually going to deal with is cuffed, is handcuffed. So the assumption would be that, yes, he would be handcuffed.
Because there does sound like there's a command that precedes the gunshots, but it's difficult to discern what he says. We thought we perhaps heard hands up, but I mean, which obviously he couldn't have done if he was handcuffed. That's why I asked the question.
Chief, do you have any update on whether the U.S. attorney has agreed to look into the case? Have they said anything to you or asked you to share any records?
The only thing that I do know is the Department of Justice is possibly going to review the case. And it will be just like, I'm assuming it would be just like the first investigation with SLED in the Attorney General's office, that they would go through their due diligence and they would reveal their findings.
Yeah, the last we heard was that the Attorney General requested
yes.
that.
And that's where we are right
now.
Okay. That's where we are right now. And, you know, technically, the only reason that you guys are here today is because I know that I gave a statement for the News and Reporter last week. I just wanted to give it on a different platform so people would just have a better understanding of what we are actually dealing with, what happened, the facts of the matter, and, you know, going forward, it's something that I want to offer the community is, I don't know if you're familiar with a fax machine. It's a fax machine, it's a scenario simulator that actually allows the individual to be in a live scenario or a virtual scenario where it actually regulates and determines how you respond in certain situations. It's almost like a shoot, don't shoot situation. Law enforcement officers are very familiar with it. This is a system that's coming to Chester here in probably the next 2 weeks. And this is something that I definitely wanted those that's interested within the community or anywhere else that wanted to come and just get a good understanding of, get a good feel of what we have to deal with, how our officer has to respond. I know we're doing perfect situations and perfect world scenarios, but sometimes when the situation is life-threatening, you don't have much time to do anything but respond according to the way you were trained. So that's something that I will be actually offering the public, the community, to take part in. And that is just to kind of bridge the gap, and we can get understanding from the community, and the community can get understanding from us about how we do our job and what we have to go through. So I think it's going to have to be give and take going forward for both community and law enforcement to coexist on a national level for better relationships.
I have one more question, if I may, about the video. Aside from the body cam, aside from the dash cam, the sergeant's dash cam that doesn't appear to show much other than him pulling up, you can hear some gunshots and him pulling out with his weapon.
Yes, sir.
What does the Walmart video, even though it's up to them or the courts or someone else besides the Chester Police Department to release that video, because you don't own it, it's theirs.
Correct.
Does the Walmart video and or audio, A, is it real time, and B, does it show or can you hear the commands from the officer to that the officer stated in the investigation to for Mr. McCree to stop? And does it have audio that would corroborate his statements to the investigators?
I don't think Walmart's footage collects that. What Walmart's footage does collect is when Mr. McCree was at the loss prevention office, him assaulting one of our officers and actually fleeing the building.
So whatever video they have of the parking lot is not any better or more, doesn't add to what
asking?
The totality of video evidence to show what happened outside.
Yeah, for what you're asking,
yes,
far
sir.
As audio commands?
Yes, sir.
No, I don't think so.
Does any of the dash cam videos from any of the patrol cars have audio, and did that pick up anything, whether it was either the sergeant or the officer's vehicles? Well, the sergeant was driving, the officer was on foot, excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Did any of that have audio?
Oh, you just said you heard the dash cam, didn't you?
I did, but it was inside. Is there any kind of outside thing that goes with it?
No, so that you have the body cam on, so that serves that purpose. But the dash cam was playing. You did say you
yes, sir.
Did see that and hear that, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Sir, would there be any updates in internal training in the department because of this incident?
Actually, yes, sir. I'm glad you asked me that question. We thought given this situation and everything that's going on, that the department needs to engage in a de-escalation training, diversity training, sensitivity training. And not saying, and I'm not saying that this is something that we lack. I'm saying it's something that we need. Because just because the situation doesn't pertain to you per se, doesn't mean you don't need to be knowledgeable about it and have it in your repertoire to be able to use it when you need to. So everybody, including myself, everybody within the department will receive that training. And we're going to be certified. Well, we're going to get a certificate in it, and it's going to be an ongoing, continuous thing. Because you're only as sharp as you make yourself. So we're going to continue those type trainings and continue to serve the public.
But Chief, you also said specifically in this incident that mm-hmm. you did not believe, or do not believe, that de-escalation was an option in this case.
Of course, the question I was just answering,
yes, sir,
was that abroad,
right,
going forward.
But specifically,
division
case,
of the
you,
police
you,
department.
You had already said.
Now, you're asking me about why we came here in the video footage. My professional opinion, and everybody has a right to their opinion. So those of you that want to disagree, you can disagree. But when someone's pointing a firearm at you and walking towards you, I don't know of a whole lot of de-escalation that you can insert in that situation but to respond. I mean, we can sit here Monday morning quarterback this thing all day long, but the bottom line is that officer was presented with a direct imminent threat. And he had to respond to that.
Chief, what is the name of that simulator that you're going to bring in?
FATS machine.
Can you spell it?
It's called, what is that? What is
F-A-T-S.
It?
FATS.
FATS?
FATS.
Mm-hmm.
And that's free to the public if they want to come?
Yes, sir.
You said 2 weeks?
Yes, we're actually trying to get it now. Hopefully we have it by the 1st of July.
Can you talk a little bit about, the family's really distraught about the incident where, I think when Baker approached him, and had his gun on McCree's neck. Can you talk about that and give us an insight on why that might happen?
Well, what I can tell you is when you're in a traumatic situation like that, you have someone who is posing an imminent threat to you, and when that person goes down, and of course he had to approach Mr. McCree, he doesn't know at that point in time what condition Mr. McCree is in. There is still an area of danger there. So he had to cover him. What you're responding to with his firearm, he covered Mr. McCree while reaching for his weapon, because that is the most dangerous aspect of the approach right there, because you gotta understand, he engaged Mr. McCree because he saw the firearm pointed at him. So that firearm is the most dangerous aspect of it. So once he grabbed the firearm while keeping him in cover and removed the firearm from his hand and tossed it aside, he reholstered immediately, did he not? And then that's when he began checking Mr. McCree, rolling him over, rolling him back over, and actually giving him medical attention the best that he could.
Just another thing, I know in the report and also in the bullet points, you talk about Baker listening to the radio chatter and then talking back and forth about where McCree was. At one point it said he has a gun and then there's shots fired right after. It seems like Baker was still in his car at the time. So who was firing these shots if it was just like McCree has a gun, seconds later, shots fired.
Where are you?
First page of bullet points, this last, second to last and last bullet points. But it's also referring to the radio traffic as well.
And your question is who was actually firing the shots?
Yes.
That would be the officer that was on the ground with Mr. McCree at that time.
So is this the four shots that preceded the 13 shots?
Sir?
In the dash cam footage, you can hear four, what sounds like four gunshots, and then there's kind of a long pause.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are another series of shots there at 13. So is that what we're talking about, that original four shots? Was that the other officer, was that Officer Harris?
Yes, before Sergeant Baker arrived, there was gunfire from the first officer. So yes, to answer your question, I think that's what she was referring to. So of course, and when I mentioned to you earlier that the officer ran out of ammunition, that's when Sergeant Baker actually arrived and saw Mr. McCree with the firearm, and Mr. McCree saw Sergeant Baker and actually advanced him with the firearm in his hand. Do I have any more questions?
Chief, not a question, but a request. I know you demonstrated how it would be possible to hold a gun handcuffed behind your back. Would you, just for curiosity's sake, allow Officer Moore to put some handcuffs on you and then do that demonstration again, please?
I'm not sure this is quite the setting for that, but
since we're trying to be transparent, and that's what we want to do, transparency, I would just like to actually see the full demonstration for the sake of transparency as the mayor of this city.
Sure, ma'am.
Would you mind coming from behind the podium?
Yeah, once we get situated here. In this situation. And trust me, that's, I really didn't want to demonstrate that, but you know what, Mayor, just because you requested him for the transparency for everybody that's watching, I would oblige and did that and do that for you. If there's not any more questions, like I said, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come and to for us to talk about this. The only way as a nation for Chester, in this community, for law enforcement, we're all going to have to have some honest dialogue, and we're all going to have to get together and be able to own our truths, so to speak. And once we do that, I think we'll be in a better place. But I just wanted to let the community know, my government know, my people know, and anybody else that's listening on this platform, that we're going to do everything that we're supposed to do. We're going to be conscious about how we deal and how we serve our people going forward, even more so. And I think that we can get past this. And I think that things will be a lot better going forward when everyone decides to pretty much sharpen their own knives and clean their house, so to speak. So I appreciate you guys coming. Sorry for holding you so long, and I hope you have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.